Cool. I think I actually saw some movement out there. That was a lot of movement for Presbyterians. So. I'm sure there was a lot of movement as well as Jesus was doing the Sermon on the Mount. As he moves through the different sections, this is kind of a bridge section. It's something that moves from the Beatitudes into getting to a large section of ethical teachings, which where Jesus really established himself as not only a teacher, but also as one who interpreted and pushed the boundaries of the law. But this is the bridge piece, and it's a familiar piece. So let's listen with fresh hearing. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. The city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until it is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. May God bless us to it. It is Jesus' words, and it is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. A moment of true confession. This past Tuesday, I had to depart from the Panera study a bit early. And so after I gave a short introduction to this morning's gospel passage, I had to leave the group for another appointment, and I left them to share their insights together for the last half an hour. Now, I could jokingly ask those who were at the Panera study to continue the sermon, but knowing this congregation's eager willingness to share, I'm afraid they would get up and do it. So let's save that for the fellowship time. You know who you are. Seriously, this is a familiar, perhaps too familiar passage and image, the salt and light. And it makes sense. Jesus liked to use images that were common and familiar in a way to which we can relate that made sense. Salt adds some spice to life. Light guides our pathway. Makes sense. But you know, as I looked in our pantry at home, I saw that salt was just one among many, many, many spices. We have a lot of spices. In Jesus' time, though, salt was more than just a spice, more than a flavoring. Here's how one person, one historian, described it, in a theological context, of course. How valuable is salt? 40 million tons are required each year to fill our needs. Homer called it divine. Plato called it, quote, substance dear to gods. Shakespeare mentioned salt 17 times in his plays, and perhaps Leonardo da Vinci wanted to send a subtle message about purity lost when he painted The Last Supper, because in that painting there's an overturned salt cellar. It's conspicuously placed right before Judas. In ancient Greece, a far-flung trade involved the exchange of salt for slaves. And that gave rise to the expression, you know, not worth his salt. That's where that came from. Special salt rations were given to Roman soldiers as pay. And it was known as the solarium argentum, which is the forerunner of the English word salary. Thousands of Napoleon's troops died during his retreat from Moscow because their wounds simply would not heal because their bodies lacked salt. Now, the human body contains about 4 ounces of salt, but without it, muscles will not contract, blood will not circulate, food will not digest, and the heart will not beat a beat. Without a doubt, salt is the essence of life. And Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth." So when Jesus says that, it means that we have something very precious in this world, something that this world desperately needs for its very survival. A kind of love and compassion, a kind of care and of hope that is unlike anything else. That is the salt that we are. And what of the image of light? As a child, marvelous author Robert Louis Stevenson was actually a sickly child. He was inside a lot. And one night, when he was quite sick, his nurse found him, and he had his nose pressed against the frosty window pane of his bedroom window. "Child, child, come away from there. You'll catch your death of cold." She fussed, but young Robert would not budge, because he was mesmerized. As he watched outside in the street, there was an old lamplighter who was slowly working his way through the black of night, lighting each of the street lamps along his route. And Robert Louis Stevenson said, "See, look there. There's a man poking a hole in darkness." Poking a hole in darkness. I was thinking of that this week as on the news I saw a couple of photographs from space. They were before and after photos. The first photo was a nighttime shot of a large village in Puerto Rico that from space, in the middle of the blackness, it was brightly lit up in the photograph. And the second photo was just this past week taken of that same village from space, and the entire photo was pitch black. Total darkness, not a single light. We're so used to having some light, even if it's a night light or the brightness in the sky from the big cities that are not that far away, that the darkness surrounding that village at night must for them be like a symbol of their daytime desperation. The deepest darkness, even the smallest light, can become a point of reference, a glimmer of hope, a way of recognizing those persons around us. A single light can poke a hole in the darkness. And Jesus calls us to be that light. And that is the key point for us in this People of Salt and Light series that we're sharing in worship and in Bible study, that we are called. We are people who are called. In the New Testament, there are 2 words for church, and one of them was fellowship, in Greek koinonia, and the other was ecclesia, like ecclesiastical. Now, koinonia, as we've shared before, it means fellowship. It means the internal strength that we gather from each other and the love and the nurture and the joy that we share. And it builds us up within. That's koinonia. But ecclesia, that word itself, literally means called out. Ekkaleo, called out. And it means to be the church out there. To still be this fellowship of Christian love, but to carry that fellowship to all the places to which God calls us to take it. In other words, to be salt and to be light. Wherever a precious faith and a guiding light are needed, God calls us, each and every one, God calls us constantly to be salt, to be light. But we've actually said, yes, I will be it. And then we need to choose to be it in the places where it makes a difference, where it matters. Or another way of phrasing is how often we talk the talk of faith and never get around to walk the walk. The timely story of a little boy who ever since he could remember wanted to grow up to be a fireman. And deep in his heart, there was this longing someday that he would be able to help people, to save them from the ravishing grasp of a fire. And he never changed his mind as he grew up. And the big day arrived. He was accepted to one of the best fireman schools in the country. And he went through that course of study. And as graduation approached, he realized that the long-awaited moment was within reach. But he started to have doubts. He was unsure. It was then one of his professors suggested he travel to Europe and study under one of the great fireman theorists of the time. Once again, graduation loomed before him after that study in Europe. And once again, he was haunted by his indecision. But then he was offered a position to teach in one of the most respected fireman schools in this country, and he accepted. And for 25 years, he taught there, and he taught with honors, and he received recognition worldwide for his teaching. In recent years, he died, and when they read his memoirs, they came across a strange passage that was written by him while on his deathbed. And this is what he wrote. I lie here today reviewing my life. I still remember my dream, my passion to be a fireman. More than anything else, I wanted to put out fires. But I realized something today. I have never put out a real fire. Never. When we see the brave dedication of those who have come from all over the West Coast to Northern California to battle in 24-hour shifts this historic and horrific inferno, we realize what courageous vision and selfless action drive those firefighters. And so imagine someone who yearns so deeply his entire life to pursue that cause, that action, so knowledgeable, so equipped, so motivated, who never actually got to put out the fire. That actually can be a metaphor for the church. Stanley Hauerwas is a wonderful professor at Duke Divinity School in North Carolina, Durham. And he points out that Protestant churches, particularly in America, have proceeded on a traditional assumption that the central core of the biblical witness was command and obedience. And if so, only those who tended to fulfill regularly command and obedience were going to stay close with the faith. But he points out that the core of the Christian gospel church is not first of all to do something, but it's first of all is to be called to be something, to be a community of character, is how he phrases it. A community of character which centers its faith and life around a common centering of convictions that define who we are as God's people. And then to share those stories, the narratives of faith that flesh out those convictions. In other words, we're people who have a story to tell, who witness, first of all, to one another, and we tell it, and we rejoice, and we weep over it, and then we pass it along, a narrative tradition. Because a church without a strong narrative tradition of who we are and what God calls us to be, a church like that will perish. The character of the church will simply dissipate. And the church will become, as he says, merely a self-perpetuating, look-alike, philosophical social club. We must acknowledge, first of all, our saltiness and our spiritual illumination, and then be willing to share it. So friends, I hope that as we continue this interim journey together through this and next year, as we share our insights, beginning with the coffee and goodies at fellowship time, that we start to tell those narratives and we start to see the possibilities and the opportunities that we have every day to be salt and light in our community and throughout the world. And that we will gain joy and energy and excitement about where and how God is calling us. Finally, one of the best descriptions of this comes, as it often does, from the words of Presbyterian minister and author Frederick Buechner. Many people love to read Fred's writings and his novels. But in his book, Listening to Your Life, this is what he wrote. Our happiness is all mixed up with each other's happiness, and our peace with each other's peace. Our own happiness, our own peace, can never be complete until we find some way of sharing it with people who, the way things are now, have no happiness and no peace. Jesus calls us to show this truth forth. Be the light of the world, he says. Where there are dark places, be the light especially there. Be the salt of the earth. Bring out the true flavor of what it is to be alive truly. Be truly alive. Be life givers to others. That is what Jesus tells the disciples to be. That is what Jesus tells his church, tells us to be and to do. Thank you, Fred. As I said at the beginning of this sermon, we're so familiar with these words of Jesus and these images, and so we tend to say, yeah, Jesus told us to be salt and light to the world. No, Jesus didn't. Jesus said, be the salt and the light of the world. The salt, the light. Really? Our task and our challenge over this next year is not to figure out how to simply survive and exist as a congregation. Our task is to discern how to best be the salt and the light of the world evermore, everywhere, every day. Really. Amen.